You would have to put him ahead of Caleb Williams, even though Caleb Williams was taken first. I think Williams has the potential, and Nix has what he did in his first year, and May is sort of halfway in between. I think, look, everybody agrees this is a really talented guy, and if you keep him upright behind a better offensive line, and I mean, all they have to do is go to average, right? They don't have to be a great offensive line. It's just a huge step forward just to go to average. You're going to see a better performance.
Aaron Schatz, Keith.
Oh, Schatz?
Shots.
Schatz.
He was
good breakdown
on.
There.
He was on with Greg Bedard. I did really think it was a good breakdown.
Yeah.
Where if you're talking about the second-year quarterbacks, Drake May is ahead of Caleb Williams based on what happened last year.
Not by much.
And he's behind Bo Nix based on what happened last year. I feel like, I mean, to me anyway, that's consistent. Caleb Williams' numbers look pretty good. You brought this up before.
Yeah, Caleb Williams' numbers aren't bad.
But then you watch him.
It was bad.
We watched him against the Patriots.
Yeah. Oh, well, that was like his worst game ever.
But he was in prime time a lot. Like, I feel like I watched a decent amount of Caleb Williams. I probably watched more Caleb Williams than I watched Bo Nix.
He does get trashed. And
sick brag, bro.
That's a good line.
Thank you.
But if you ask somebody, you ask a football, like a ball knower, you're like, hey, what were Caleb Williams' stats last year? They'd be like, oh, that's probably terrible. Like 12 touchdowns, 8 picks. Like, wrong. 20 touchdowns, 6 picks. And he started 17 games, which I also think is an important stat. Because Drake May, the team screwed up, didn't start him right away, not his fault. But then when he did start, he got hurt twice, had to come out of games. And so Caleb Williams proved that he could play a full NFL season already. Had way more touchdowns than picks. Now, he had some bad games.
You're taking Caleb Williams and Bo Nix over Drake May. It sounds like you disagree with our guy, Schatz.
Yeah. No, I think this has a chance to be the 2020 draft class. There's one draft class recently that had like 4 good quarterbacks, and people are like, that's kind of the outlier.
It was the Herbert Tua that year, right?
I think so. It was Jordan Love in that one, maybe, who I think's decent. Jalen Hurts, like whatever.
Right. I think it was 2020.
It can happen. I think Caleb Williams, Drake May, Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels can all be pretty good. Jaden Daniels is already good. Bo Nix had a good year and won some games and made the playoffs. The other two guys are still more up in the air. So if you asked me to bet on them, I think they're all going to be decent. But coming into their rookie year, I would have taken Caleb Williams over Drake May. After last year, there were highs and lows for both. Both had to get new coaches, new coordinators, new everything around them. I think Caleb Williams is the better overall quarterback, but it doesn't mean I don't think that Drake May can have a good year.
So I would have taken May over Williams last year at this time. So basically neither of us have changed our mind.
Correct.
There hasn't been enough to make us change our minds. See, I agree with that. Yeah. So that's fine. So you preferred Caleb Williams coming into last year?
Yeah.
And going into this season, you still prefer Caleb Williams. They were close enough where I think that's fair.
Who's in a better spot right now?
I was on the opposite side of that debate. Well, it's an interesting question. I think Caleb Williams has more talent around him. I think Drake May has a super easy schedule. The Bears don't have an easy schedule. They got to play the Lions twice and the Vikings twice.
Lions are going to be down.
Lions are going to be down. But
that's my bold flavor for the year.
Well, don't spoil our NFL predictions yet. That's a month's long tease is what that is.
They might not be great this year.
But they just
lost another dude.
That's a tough division. So who's in a better spot? Well, talent-wise around him, definitely Caleb Williams has more talent around
Ben
him.
Ben Johnson calling your plays or better, Josh McDaniels?
Better play caller? Agreed. Yeah. Who's got more winnable games? Drake May. And I don't really think it's close. Who's got a better defense? That might still be Caleb Williams, actually.
Yeah. No, you're right. The schedule, and I think that's one of the things that you and I keep pointing to as to why we're so kind of high on the Patriots and like their overall win total and what their expectations should be. Is it kind of broke right for them. You know, they finished last year. They got a last place schedule on top of some of the other games that change year over year. Like, it's shaping up pretty good for them. Like, they play a bunch of bad teams. I also don't know just how good the Jets and Dolphins are going to be, for example. So those are 4 more of your games in there outside of the teams that finished last in all the teams that were drafting at the top this year. You play all of them. So that is definitely in their favor.
And look, what looks good on paper might not necessarily come to fruition. Some of those teams might be good or better than expected. So you never know. But sitting here today, I'd say the Patriots have more winnable games than Chicago.
I agree.
By the way, the 2020 draft class, this is from the Jones Stats and Info Department.
2020, this is the good one, right?
Yep. Joe Burrow won. We missed that one.
Of course.
Tua 5, Herbert 6. And then if you go to the late first round, you got Jordan Love at 26. You have Jalen Hurts at 50.
So that's 5 legitimate starting quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. One's already won a Super Bowl. Another's already been to a Super Bowl. all Pro Bowlers at one point. So I think this last year's draft class could be similar. Like, I don't like J.J. McCarthy, but who knows? Maybe he ends up being good, too. That was a good class. Penix? We'll see.
Well, yeah, no, there's some
names there. I mean, Daniels is already like a no-brainer. Everybody else is still kind of fighting for it. Like, Drake May this season could certainly go in a variety of ways. You see the way he's being talked about going into this year. The expectations nationally are not very high for Drake May.
No.
I think locally they are, though.
Locally they are, and I think they should be. You guys can discuss 617-779-7937. Already a lot of pushback on, I guess, my stance on Drake May. They're siding with you. They're disagreeing with me and Schatz.
You and Schatz.
Caleb way better. No contest. Drake plays like Drew Bledsoe's last few years. Happy feet. Makes receivers catch without being able to get yards after catch. Do you think May had happy feet?
No.
I think he took off. I think he took off and picked up yards. Bledsoe never did that.
Weren't they touting how great his footwork was after they sat him for the first 6 weeks?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't remember Bledsoe running for as many yards as
Drake May. I wouldn't describe Drake May as – I would describe Caleb Williams as happy feet. I don't think Drake May had happy feet. I think May actually looked pretty comfortable in the pocket. He was too turnover prone.
Yeah.
But
he won one game.
Yeah, I don't think he looked uncomfortable in the pocket. Williams
and
had no
after catch. Is that a skill issue or Drake May issue?
Well, that's the textual
who's
point.
Getting
if
open?
He's, if
no,
he's
who's
not
getting open to get run after the catch?
Well, fair.
No, they got nobody.
Williams had no offensive line. He was running for his life on every drop back. Same for Drake May.
They also fired their offensive coordinator in the season for the Bears.
Yeah, they switched play callers multiple times last year.
They did it at least right after the Patriots game, I believe.
Yeah,
right now when Shane Waldron got canned.
Oh, no. Yeah. So
and then they might have at the end of the year. I don't even remember.
Yeah. Well, because then they fired Eberflus later, right?
The coach, yeah.
And so then the interim offensive coordinator who's now here, right? Thomas Brown?
Yeah. He got promoted twice in like 3 weeks.
He was going places.
Yeah. And also, I think their weapons ended up way better than Drake May's, but it was a little bit overrated because they got Keenan Allen. It's like, looks like he ate Keenan Allen. Like, that guy, I don't know how much he was helping.
Right.
Roma Dunze was a rookie, so he was kind of hot or cold. They did have DJ Moore, but he didn't even seem like he wanted to be there.
Nope.
So their offensive line was trash. And then you remember their schedule was a murderer's row because they started the year like maybe 5-5.
No, I'm telling you, it's going to be murderer's row again.
No, it is. No, yeah. I get that. But that doesn't mean Caleb Williams is worse than Drake May. It just means it's going to be more difficult for him to win games.
No, that's fair. But again,
we pulled that up last year. I remember in real time, I think they were like 5-5, and we're like, could the Bears be like a playoff team? And we're looking at the schedule like, they might not win another game, and they didn't. They like lost out, didn't they?
Yeah. Did they pick up one late season win? I forget.
Oh, yeah, they won week 17.
There you go.
But they lost from week 8 through week 17.
They were 4-2.
Every game.
They were 4-2, right?
They were 4-2 going into their bye week.
Then they had the Jaden Daniels game with the Hail Mary, and they basically never won again.
They lost 10 straight games.
So all I would say, and this is a debate this morning with Chris and Scheim, and with Curtis and Scheim. Not Scheim with himself.
Although I've listened to that before, too.
And I thought it was a good debate. But just because Caleb Williams has better weapons also doesn't make him better than Drake May, right? If we're going independent of the schedule and going independent of the weapons, who's better? I would still take May.
Yeah.
But that's up for debate.
No, I think it's, just to circle back, the top three quarterbacks drafted a year ago, they all had their opportunity last year. One clearly took off.
Yep.
So they were all, it was up for debate. If you asked three different people who the best quarterback was coming into the draft, you might have gotten three different answers.
Yep.
This past year, no, you can't. Now that was one guy.
Based on the league's intel to Jeremy Fowler, he's the best quarterback in the NFC after 1 year.
They're chasing him, but I still think if you polled 100 scouts in the NFL, Caleb Williams or Drake May, it might be 50-50. Like, I feel like that would be pretty close.
And if you add Nixon to it, it might be
split. They might
take
Nixon. Yeah,
true. So you guys can jump in, 617-779-7937. Where does Drake May fit in with the quarterbacks from a year ago? Is he better than Caleb Williams? Is he better than Bo Nix? Again, you can jump in there. You can also stream WEEI anytime on the Odyssey app, as well as the iHeartRadio and TuneIn apps. You can catch the Dork Minute there as well. Comes your way at 11:45. Meanwhile, Phil Perry Keefe came out with the quarterback situation rankings.
Situation rankings.
We like a good ranking.
Love
on this show.
Ranking, whether it's players, coaches, situations, whatever it might be.
Whatever you have.
Yeah.
And so he used as a guidepost what Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks at the Move the Sticks podcast used.
Sure.
The three P's, Keefe.
Three P's?
Any guesses as to what those are?
Pursuit, persistence, Plum.
Close. Playmaker?
Yep.
Play caller.
Play caller.
Protection.
Play protection.
There.
I got there. Just as quick as you did maybe a little bit before.
So those are the three Ps.
Yep.
He used those to sort of rank these QB situations. Again, that's playmaker.
Yep.
Play caller.
Play caller.
Protection.
Protection.
Is what that is.
Yep. It's your old line. It's your skill group and it's your play caller. I got it. OC.
So Phil has been ranking those individual categories as they've gone along.
Okay.
I remember we talked about this at one point, the playmaker rankings.
Low.
Your pass catchers, they were 31st out of 32.
Yep, that's low.
Play caller, he had Josh McDaniels 11th play caller in the league. So not a top 10 play caller, but certainly an improvement from a year ago. And in the protection category, very important, they checked in 24th out of 32. Okay. So all he did was average all three together, and he came up with a league-wide ranking of the quarterback situations. So I'm looking at the different rankings / tiers. He tiered and ranked, Keith, which is what I like to
tiers
do.
Tiers and ranking. So a ranking within the tiers.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
So like, for instance, you've won the lottery, kid, is the top tier.
You won the lottery, kid.
Vikings, Rams, Ravens, Niners. That's his top tier 1-4.
Okay. Those are good situations for quarterbacks.
Great situations, yep, for quarterbacks.
I get it.
Cushy setup. Bears, Caleb Williams. Broncos, Bo Nix, mm-hmm, 5-6. Eagles, Commanders, Buccaneers are 7-9. Okay?
Okay.
Still no Patriots.
No.
Must be nice. Tier 3. Chiefs, Bills, Lions, Packers, Colts. Honestly, I think that's way high on Chiefs and Bills, but it's not just the talent.
I was going to say,
it's the O-line, it's the coaching, right, it's all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Andy Reid probably ranks him at the top for that part of it.
So
play
that
caller
factors,
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So now we're basically through the top half of the league.
Yep.
We get to Tier 4. Seen worse. Still no Patriots.
No.
Dolphins, Falcons, Bengals, Cardinals. It's on your shoulders. Quarterbacks.
Yep.
Raiders, Chargers, Jaguars, Browns, Cowboys. That's 19 through 23.
All right, still going.
Checking in at the second to last tier, the playing with fire tier, you have the New England Patriots tied for 24th with the New York Giants.
Man, couldn't even get a tiebreaker there.
Nope.
The 24th, maybe 25th best or quote unquote best situation in the NFL. And my guess is Phil probably had Josh McDaniels ranked relatively high.
He had him 11th, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that skews the ratings a little bit, or it helps the ratings a little bit,
right,
because protection and playmakers are towards the bottom. We know where playmakers ranks.
If we're
and
lower,
obviously protection's not very high either.
If we're lower on McDaniels, yeah, and I think we're both probably lower, yeah, on McDaniels than Phil is.
Yep.
Right, you're actually, this
even
is an inflated
lower
number. Yeah. Good point.
Yep. No, but I mean, it's not a surprise. Like the quarterback, any quarterback, Drake May, or if it happened to be somebody else, is going to have to be the one that elevates them. It's not in that Minnesota-San Francisco tier where you just don't screw it up. That's sort of the idea for that quarterback. Like, hey, don't throw bad picks. Put us in the right spot. Our talent's going to win out. These teams that you're talking about down here that don't have everything going for them, you got to be the quarterback that someday is going to make $50 million a year. You're going to have to prove that you're the best player on offense. They improved where they were a year ago. I don't know if Phil did this exercise last year. My guess is they were 31st or 32nd. Because they had a worse protection, they had worse playmakers, they had a worse play caller.
Right.
So they probably, so without knowing it, moved up.
It's better to be 24-25 than 31-32.
Yeah.
But you're still 24-25.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so here are the worse offensive situations for a quarterback than Drake May. Now, remember, they're tied with the Giants, so take them off the list.
Okay.
Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers are 26.
So, I don't know.
I'd rather have George Pickens and what's going on there, right?
Yeah. Well, and no, what's his name too, right? Didn't they just get DK Metcalf?
What did I say? Pickens? I meant to say Metcalf. Right. They shipped.
They got rid of Pickens.
Metcalf is what I meant
to say. DK Metcalf. Yes. Is Arthur Smith the offensive coordinator?
Mm-hmm.
They just added Jonnu Smith.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Right.
Probably better.
I think I'd rather have what's going on. And remember, it's quarterback independent.
Yeah.
These
yeah
are the situations around the quarterback. So I think I'd rather have the Steelers. The Saints, I'd agree with. Saints is a terrible
Saints
situation.
Saints is a mess. Good one.
So that's the end of that tier. Bottom tier. This could get ugly.
Oh, ooh.
Jets?
They got Garrett Wilson.
I'd rather have the Jets.
Yeah.
I'd rather have Garrett Wilson. I know, like, now
Bruce
I got to factor
Hall
in the play caller. Now I got to factor in the O-line, all this other stuff. I'd rather have the Jets talent.
They clearly have a number one. I feel like, without getting into the specifics on the O-line, I'm not 100% sure on the differences. But last year, when you looked at the Commanders, and Jaden Daniels was there, wasn't it? Well, you got Terry McLaurin and really nothing else, mm-hmm. and then he made that happen. So I feel like the Jets is kind of similar. It's like you don't have a ton, but you do have Garrett Wilson. He's a top 10 receiver.
I'd rather sacrifice a quote-unquote high-end play caller, Josh McDaniels, which I disagree with. That's why I put it in quotes.
Yeah.
I'd rather have, as you said, Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson than the play caller, personally. The other teams are Carolina, Houston, Seattle, Tennessee. Houston... Yeah. I mean, look, Nico Collins to me is a standout, but they're relying on a lot of rookies there.
Yep.
But that's another one I'd at least think about.
All right.
But that's where the Patriots slot in, which, yeah, is not great. And I think it just hammers home some of these things we've been talking about, or at least, you know, while I was in last week, kind of where we left off. I know Jeremy Fowler continued his ranks.
Yeah.
The Patriots have one top 10 player in the league.
They shockingly did not have a wideout. We went over that list. They did not have a wideout. They, between guys that were honorable mentions and receiving votes, they went, I think, 25 deep. No surprise. Yeah. They didn't have it. I don't know. The expectation for Diggs across the league is clearly very low. I think at the end of the year, there's a chance he's a top 25 guy, but regardless. And then they did corners where Gonzo was sixth, although he did get first place votes. There were at least one first place vote on there for him. Finished sixth, but there was a lot of talk. One of the quotes, the pull quotes was, He could be the next big thing.
He's the closest thing to Sertan,
yes,
right? I saw that. I didn't realize he got a first-place vote, but I did see that comment.
Yeah. And then Carlton Davis was in receiving votes. So, I mean, clearly the strength of the team, if you're doing this position group rankings, would be the corners. I mean, those are two corners that most teams in the league would want and should be one of the better duos in the whole entire NFL.
Yeah, and look, I'm not surprised when you look at their talent. It's improved from a year ago, as you said, but it's still bottom third-ish of the league. That checks out to me.
I'm trying to think about how many players were actually referenced over that. It had to be like 250 players, right?
Total? Yeah, something like that, probably.
So like 300 maybe, because they go deep into these honorable mentions and also receiving votes. So let's say out of 300 players in the NFL, I think the Patriots had five guys.
I think that's right.
Named.
I think they had...
Duggar, Henry...
Yeah, so
Gonzo, Davis, and Spillane.
Yeah, correct. Gonzalez was sixth among corners. He's their only top 10 player.
Right.
Henry was their only honorable mention. And then, Spillane, Davis, and Duggar all also received votes. That's it.
Yeah.
Not great.
No, and it's all, yeah. So, I mean, you'll take the love for Gonzo in the corners, and that's great. But other than that, you got a middle linebacker, a tight end, and a safety.
Well, and you just mentioned Diggs. We should add this, and we can get into the discussion further about the wide receiver room and what a fully healthy Diggs looks like. He's not starting camp on PUP. And
that's good news.
I've been nervous from before they even signed him. Before they even brought him in, I'm like, I wouldn't sign him because I don't think he's going to be ready for week one. If he's not starting camp on PUP, he's going to be ready quicker than I thought. Even if it's not week one, it's going to be faster than I thought. We were talking week four. He'll assuredly be back for week five, the rematch with Buffalo. But PUP would have him out for, the first 4 weeks? He's going to be back sooner than that based on the Patriots leaving him off the list.
Watching him like a hawk on Wednesday. Tell you what, that's the guy to keep an eye on. By far.
Well, that's the guy I'm going to be watching.
No, I'm going to be watching. I have my eyes on him.
I'm locked in on a hawk.
I'm going to be looking at Diggs.
Like Steph Diggs.
Yep, I'm going to bring my little binocs.
But that's not something I expected, Keith. And if he's out there week one, maybe it does make me feel better about their receiver room and the talent around Drake May. That's a big difference if he's out there week one.
Because they are really depending on this guy. You know, you could argue whether they shouldn't, or the position they've put themselves in, whatever. They desperately need him because after that, it's going to take some sort of out-of-nowhere career year from another one of those receivers where nobody saw it coming. Like, who's the second-best receiver? Like, assuming Diggs is your best, even in this state of Steph Diggs, there's no consensus second-best guy, and I don't know how high that ceiling even is. So if Diggs can't go for any number of reasons, like, good luck.
So the Patriots could still make moves to improve their receiver room, but it does sound like Diggs is close to a return, which should make you feel different about Drake May and the talent around Drake May going into training camp, which gets started on Wednesday. You'll hear from Mike Vrabel tomorrow, right about this time, 24 hours from now, at 11:30. We'll play that for you live on Jones and Keefe, which means we'll have to move tiers a little earlier in the program. We also have a Dork Minute on the way at 11:45 today, so less than a half hour from now. Stay tuned for that. We'll get back to Stephon Diggs and when we expect him on the field.
My anticipation is that the Commanders are going to take a swing at getting something done with him over the course of the next week, just because it makes too much sense for both sides.
I think the Patriots would be very interested in this. Now, there's a price point for all of it, and what would that mean? And, you know, obviously he's not going to come here with an unresolved contract situation, so you'd be talking about a draft pick plus a contract. He's a little older than people realize because he was a five-year college guy, so he's over 30 now. But, you know, certainly as far as, like, what they're looking for from a person, from a player, helping Drake, like, this guy checks.
He checks all the boxes, Terry McLaurin. I just...
Sure does.
I can't see Washington moving him. It's a fun discussion. If he were really available, the Patriots should be in. I don't trust that they'd really be in. And it's Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. We'll get you a hashtag Dork Minute with Rich Keefe coming up about 15 minutes from now. We'll get back to the Red Sox as well. Mix in a few Celtics thoughts before we get out of here today. But we'll stick with the Patriots for now. We were talking about helping out Drake May and how do you do it. Well, trading for Terry McLaurin would definitely do that. But he's a player, as Breer illustrated, that, again, I don't think Washington's going to move. But if they did move him, you're giving up high-level draft compensation, and you have to pay him. And I'm sure you guys talked about this last week, Keith, but the whole – actually, we briefly talked about it before Bill clapped back at Robert. We're like, oh, I said this. I'm like, Robert said something nice about Bill. You're like, I don't know about that, man.
No.
You're like, I think Robert was just, you know, patting himself on the back. And Bill agreed with you because Bill clapped back big time at Robert. But the detail that came out in that Van Natta story – is that the Patriots are second to last in cash spending since Kraft took over in 94. And so you're telling me they're going to give up a high-level draft pick and pay a guy like McLaurin. I hope they do.
Yeah.
I would love them to do it. I'm not saying they shouldn't. That doesn't sound like the type of move they make. So I think a guy
it
like that is just not their kind of guy.
At some point, you're right, it doesn't fit the track record, but at some point you have to realize – with Tom Brady, you can play by a different set of rules
True.
Than without Tom Brady.
True.
And I don't know how many more years have to go by till you realize, like,
we know that.
Yes.
Do they know that?
They should. They should. Maybe not yet.
I mean,
I wouldn't say they do yet.
As of the Dynasty on Apple TV
yeah.
and his comments last week probably still reek of this. As of the Dynasty, Kraft didn't know it.
No, Bill and Robert both thinking like it was them.
Right.
And they're like, we had a quarterback,
right.
Nice guy, you know. But no, you have to play by a different set of rules because all these other teams that make these big moves, are they really dumb? Like, are the Eagles are dumb for trading for A.J. Brown?
Yep.
Or, like, the Bills when they got Diggs?
Stupid.
or the you know, whatever. Like, go through the list of all these different teams that acquired big-time wide receivers and then paid them. So you've tried drafting them, and you could say most of that was Bill, but also, you know, Elliott Wolf. We'll see what happens with Kyle Williams, right? Like, that's Mike Vrabel's first guy that they took a shot at.
Right, we're not blaming Wolf for him. That's Vrabel's guy.
If you can't draft him, like the Commanders drafted Terry McLaurin well after you drafted N'Keal Harry. But we don't need to go down
that road. No, don't go back to that, please.
But I'm saying, like, are these teams all dumb for bringing in wide receivers that have significantly helped their young quarterbacks? I would say no. I would say it's really helped a lot of teams. In fact, the last team that did it, or one of the last teams, won a Super Bowl. So you can even point to that. So they should be willing to do that. I'm with you. Ultimately, I think the Commanders, you know, you get into camp and you get closer to it. You're like, we need this guy. They'll end up paying him a lot of money. But for whatever reason, they haven't done it yet. But the Patriots should be at the top of the list if they're actually taking calls and trying to move them.
They've been linked to guys like this in the past. They never get them. And I think ownership is a factor in that. They didn't get DK Metcalf. Oh, Metcalf didn't want to play here. I bet if they gave him the right contract, he'd want to play here.
I don't think he wanted to play in Pittsburgh.
No, me either. He didn't want to play in cold weather. He's in Pittsburgh. So something tells me that if they gave DK Metcalf the contract, he would have come here. Same thing with Ayuk a couple of years ago. But these are guys who are attached to draft capital and big contracts. And I know Ayuk, and Breer reported on some of this at the time, the Patriots supposedly had a real strong offer for Ayuk contractually, just like they supposedly had a real strong one for Chris Godwin. I'd want to see the details because on paper, they had a real strong offer for Diggs. Until you dug in on the details.
But this is what you have to do because we saw what the wide receiver free agent class looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And if you even put Godwin to the side because he ended up re-signing, if you look at the free agents that changed teams, I mean, Cooper Kupp at his age and Steph Diggs are two of the best ones. Because the other ones were trades. Deebo was a trade. DK Metcalf was a trade.
Yeah.
So, like, That's what a free agent class looks like. And if, again, if you're not going to hit them in the draft, you have to be willing to trade a lot for them, find the established guy, bring him in, and then pay him. That's just how it works for top-end receivers.
Yeah, they're not. And so who do you blame for that? You can still blame Bill if you want. You can look at Kraft over the lifespan of his ownership and look at them. That doesn't feel like something he's willing to do. It's Jones and Kiefer, brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. You can visit Jackson Lumber and Millwork for all your residential remodeling or commercial building materials and supplies at Jackson Lumber and Millwork, providing solutions and delivering results since 1946. It came out over the weekend who was starting camp on the active PUP list.
Yeah.
Okay. Mac Hollins, which...
Mac Hollins. What's up with that?
Maybe we should be a little more worried about that one.
Yeah, maybe he's not a lock.
He was one of the guys who wasn't at mandatory minicamp. It turns out he's hurt, and he's going to start on active PUP. Now, these guys can be removed at any point, but he's going to start there. Austin Hooper's on that list. Vadarian Lowe. Jelani Tavai still here for some reason.
Lowe and Tavai are still on the team.
There is your active PUP list.
Is Tavai still going to do the Fridays with the Greg Hill Show this year?
Something tells me no.
They're not going to get him?
They might get Spillane instead.
Maybe Spillane.
Yeah,
talk to Spillane.
Yeah, something tells me Jelani Tavai. I mean, look, apparently the guy loves making headlines. Apparently, welcome on our show.
Hates the fans.
No, I mean, he hates the fan base.
He doesn't. They got another place.
He doesn't like the fans.
He hates. They're not qualified to do what Mayo's doing.
Well, maybe we're maybe sure we're talking about this the wrong way, Keith.
Yeah.
Maybe, right, is he going to be on the Greg Hill Show? Probably not.
No, our show.
I mean, look.
He can pop on our show.
Opportunities are available on Jones and Keefe. He's looking for a new spot.
Guy's got a lot to say.
On the NFI list, Carlton Davis. We should probably look at that.
Yeah.
And then two guys I've never heard of are on the NFI list.
Okay.
None of those guys are cleared to play yet if you're on active PUP or the NFI. Steph Diggs on neither list.
That's a great sign.
Which means Steph Diggs is truly, and I had been very skeptical about this, and I was wrong. He is truly trending towards being ready. Week one. I don't know if that means he's fully participating in training camp starting Wednesday, like team activities. He'll be out there. I just read an item on Godwin, who we were talking about. Different injuries. Godwin had an ankle injury. Diggs tore his ACL. So different injuries, different timelines. I just read a headline that Godwin won't be doing any team activities in training camp. So maybe Diggs won't be doing the full thing. But if he's off that list, he's fully trending towards a week one return, which I didn't think was going
to
be possible.
You know what that means? You need to start taking those workout videos more serious.
I do.
He was looking good.
I do.
Tossing a medicine ball around, sprinting around a little bit. Even though there was a lot of drama around the, you know, him on the boat, him missing a day, if you really look at what happened, he was on the field for some of the OTA stuff, which
and
I didn't
been,
think health-wise was going to happen.
Me neither. And he's been with May at all these workouts.
Yeah. So, like, that part of it is a great sign. He ran through some of the drills, didn't do like the team drills, but that to me at least placed him ahead of schedule. And so if he was sort of targeting early in the season, I even thought like glass half full was a week three or four return. And now it's like, no, week one is very, very much on the table. And so let's see how much he does. And I even think for like a veteran player, even if he was 100%, I don't even know if he would be doing every single thing, right? Like, even if he wasn't coming off the injury, just like an older guy, you might kind of ease him up a little bit. So he'll be the guy, like, to me, he's the clear-cut, most interesting, most important player of the training camp. Like, I just want to see what he's doing, how close he is to being ready to play in a real game.
If he's playing a full season, and again, I mean, like, he needs to be healthy once he's back out there, and I don't think we're jumping the gun on saying he's trending towards week one. In fact, that was the interpretation from Mike Reese.
And he's pretty durable. Like, last year was the one time he got hurt midway through the year. Prior to that, he pretty much plays every game or misses a game. Like, he's pretty much out there since he's coming into the league.
Reese says Diggs appears to be on track to be on the field day one of training camp. That doesn't mean week one of the season. That doesn't mean a full participant, but I think that's certainly the way that he's trending. You mentioned his health, Keith. I mean, extrapolate out some of the numbers too, assuming he's anything close to the same player after the injury.
Right.
But the last time Stephon Diggs played a full season, 15 plus games, let's call it, and didn't have 1,000 yards was 2017. So I don't know if he's out there, he's playing a full year and the touchdowns in those years, starting in 2018. 9, 6, 8, 10, 11, 8. He had 3.5 a season last year, so call it another 6.
Yeah, Fitzy mentioned on Friday, I think his over-under for the season is like 4.5 touchdowns. Like, I think he's going to smash that.
So if he's playing a full season, yes.
Yeah.
And
he had 3 last year and half a season.
Correct.
So, I mean, I think same thing with Drake May. Like the Drake May numbers, we talked about this a week ago, like this sort of the preseason yards, touchdown, over-unders. It seems like a layup if healthy. And so I think that's what you have to kind of worry about. I worry about it a little bit more, believe it or not, with Drake May than I do with Steph Diggs. I feel like Steph Diggs pretty much had this one injury that has cost him.
If you tell me I get 17 games out of Steph Diggs, I feel better about him hitting all of his overs than Drake May hitting all of his overs in 17 games.
My point
games.
Is, like, if Diggs can play week one, I'm more confident he plays 17 games than I am Drake May playing 17 games.
Oh, I see.
Even though he's way younger.
Yeah, that's probably
maybe
true.
Maybe it's the position, whatever, or just the, you know, I want to see it done first. Like, Steph Diggs has played start to finish NFL season. Drake May hasn't. And he's only had one opportunity, but he didn't do it. So, yeah, but those guys very much, you know, kind of tied together also. You know, if Drake May hits his numbers, I feel like Steph Diggs is also out there for the majority of the games. Because if he's not, it might be pretty tough.
Well, I think the worst case scenario is they have a pretty, I think, soft landing to start the year.
Yeah.
Vegas at Miami, home against Pittsburgh, home against Carolina. If Diggs is out there for all those games, I feel better about them going certainly 2-2, maybe 3-1 in that stretch. Worst case scenario is he misses the first month. They're 1-3. He comes back for Buffalo. He makes it about himself, and the whole thing snowballs, right?
But they beat Buffalo.
if he's back for all those games, I feel better about the team winning games early, May reaching his expectations, and a big season out of Diggs. So that was very good news over the weekend, something I personally didn't see coming.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'd say, I'd expect him out there week one, which is not what I thought was going to be the case.
Yeah. The Carlton Davis one kind of stood out a little bit. You're talking about guys that aren't available. So NFI is the non-football injury list.
Yeah, so what did he get hurt on, the jet ski?
I don't know. Maybe.
Did he get hurt
fast?
Hurt on one of those cool car-looking things floating around?
I don't know.
NFI means you got hurt away from the facility is what that means. So so what is that? I don't know.
I don't know. It could be anything. It could be one of these strange injuries for all we know. But yeah, that one's kind of – because he's – we went over the met. He's one of your better players. Let's see.
What was the Cutter Crawford one again? We don't know. We still don't know the Cutter Crawford one.
They won't tell you. He didn't.
It was super
it was
normal.
A mistake,
there
guys.
Was nothing weird going on.
Yeah, that was strange. We gotta find the answer to that.
We do. That's what we gotta get to the bottom of that.
Get Pablo Torre on that.
he'll figure it out. That's Pablo Torre territory. Uh-huh. That's true. 617-779-7937. You guys can jump in here on Jones and Keefe. We'll get back to the Red Sox at high noon, but we have a hashtag Dork Minute for you coming up next.
The show starts in one.
This is movie time.
Shang-Chi?
You've seen none?
None.
Me and Billy have combined for one.
Billy's 100 years old.
I don't like comic book movies. I'm an old man.
Yes. Right.
You ever see the movie Dirk Diggler?
I did a movie with George Mures.
I'm going to give it a rock hard 5 out of 6.
Make sure you subscribe to the
Hashtag Dork Podcast.
Hi. Thanks for coming.
Can you believe our best friends are getting married?
I'm like envelope. Could it be cash? A check?
Daddy! Oh my god.
I'm calling 911.
Everyone chill out!
We don't tell anybody what happened tonight.
We should go. What does it say?
What are you waiting for?
Holy smokes. That right there, Jones, the sound of I Know What You Did Last Summer 2025 version. There's a new film, and I'm here to review it for you. I Know You Did Last Summer in theaters over the weekend. And this movie currently on Rotten Tomatoes, 38% by the critics.
Okay, that's not our score.
That's not, we don't
that's
look
not
at that.
Us.
We don't even care about that. Nope. Don't worry about that. 68%. So you gotta, somebody's
so
going to upvote that a little bit
so
more.
Somebody's
going to upvote that. Is by the audience. Weekend box office, it finished third. Can't imagine they were thrilled with that. Although it's a horror movie, it didn't cost a lot of money to make, so they can make their money back soon. Superman actually crushed once again.
I saw this over the weekend. Yeah,
big. It's a, you saw the numbers, not the film.
No, of course not the film. No, I'm sorry. The number, that three straight weeks of that?
No, I just want to watch the movie.
Only two. No, yeah, I just want to read about the movie. I don't want to see it.
Two, and it'll probably only be two because Fantastic Four comes out this weekend. Hmm. But Superman was number one. Jurassic World Rebirth was actually number two. And then I Know What You Did Last Summer in the United States made $13 million. Of course, the original came out in 1997, which they do reference several times throughout the movie.
Oh, that comes up?
The Massacre in 1997. So this movie, I'll be honest, I'm a little biased. It's made for me. It's made for people that loved the 1997 one and that were 13, 14 years old when that one came out, still have a soft spot in their heart for that movie, which wasn't particularly a great movie.
No, but...
very nostalgic.
Good cast.
Great cast.
Good cast.
Goat cast.
You think think Charlie Morton... he's probably too old for this.
Charlie Morton might have missed this.
Yeah.
Charlie Morton brought his kids to it.
He was probably too cool for this movie.
Probably brought his kids to it. That's a good point. Yeah.
But I liked it. And it's sort of the same model as a few years ago, Scream 5 was just titled Scream. It's what they refer to as a requel. So it's not a reboot, but it's kind of a reboot. It's also kind of a sequel. So they kind of throw the two together.
Yeah, it's all kind of jammed in there.
And I guess they're like, hey, we're just going to put the same name on it. So that's what they did. Jennifer Love Hewitt is back. Freddie Prinze Jr. is back.
Wow, so I was, wait a minute.
They're on the poster. That's not a spoiler.
I was just about to ask, who's the Jennifer Love Hewitt? Who's the Freddie Prinze? They're
Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie Prinze. Although there are also characters that are very much like them. There's also a character that's very similar to the Ryan Phillippe character.
Ah,
it's kind of how it goes.
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
There's a character that's like Sarah Michelle Gellar.
All that covered?
They play the hits.
They play the hits a little bit. They know what they're doing, though.
But I like this crap. I like what they refer to, like a world that existed, whatever it was, 27, 28 years ago, and the aftermath of that. I think that's cool. They've created a little universe for themselves in Southport, North Carolina. I didn't check. I'm guessing it's a fictional town, but that's what they refer to it as. And I think it's good stuff, and they tie the two together. It is an hour and 51 minutes.
I'm being told Southport, real place.
Real place. That's where they were.
Brunswick County, North Carolina.
Sure, hell yeah, it was.
It's a real place.
Oh, yeah, right on the water. Well, you have fishermen down there.
Yep, that checks out.
You got a lot of guys in slickers.
That's true.
That's what it is. Now, most slasher movies should be 90 minutes. This one's longer, but I don't think it didn't feel like it was a slog. I thought it was pretty good. Again, I would say if you like the first one. No. If you love the first one, then I think you might like this one. If not, then you know what? Maybe not every movie is for you, but I enjoyed it.
You think the critics are being a little snooty about it?
Of course.
Yeah.
But the critics didn't like the first one. So you're not going to say this one's better than the first one.
At least, you couldn't. At least they're consistent.
They are, if nothing else. I think the first one, Roddy T scores like in the 40s.
Yeah, it's a 46.
Yeah. Okay. Better film. Critics got that right.
Cast is off
with
the charts.
With a 41% audience.
Johnny?
That's insane.
That's wild.
How do you not enjoy that? How do you not have a nice time?
Well, it was the 90s. We were different then.
But it was a year after Scream.
Yep.
It was written by the same guy that wrote Scream. It was very enjoyable. Like you said, the greatest cast of all time.
I didn't realize
for a high school movie.
And I'm going off my memory, but I'm not reading this directly off Wikipedia or anything.
Sure.
Johnny Galecki was in this? The original.
The OG one.
I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. He said, hey, hooked. Ray, why don't you wipe that my bleep don't stink
we
grin off your face.
He was tough.
Yeah.
We're supposed to believe he was like a tough guy.
I don't remember this.
Well, he was like a real townie.
Okay.
And he didn't like how Ray was hanging out with the rich kids.
Okay, good.
That was his whole thing.
I didn't realize he was in it.
He met his end.
Okay.
He did not make it through that film.
Right.
Therefore, he's not in this one.
Okay.
No, Johnny Galecki redo in this one.
It all checks out. Okay.
He's for sure dead. There's a podcaster in this movie, which I like that.
Modern times.
A lot of movies now and TV shows are adding the podcast.
So they just went with Halloween 2018.
Yeah, but they did it better.
So they're ripping off like every requel.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's what they did originally. So it makes sense.
You know what, that's
like,
fair.
If you look at it that way.
If you metagame it, yeah, that's fair.
That's what they're doing.
You mentioned this is a little longer than the...
Your standard slasher film?
The old...
I don't know what the last one was.
Oh, okay, I was saying...
No, I was just saying your normal...
Hour
like,
41.
This is a long,
so it's 10 minutes longer.
Okay. My sister.
Oh, there's also, sorry to cut you off, also a post-credit scene.
Oh, nice.
So if you haven't seen the film yet, stay for post-credits. Davey and I are going to do a full spoiler, full recap of this. So if you have watched it and want to hear more about it tonight on the Dork Podcast, but there is a post-credits, like it's an MCU movie, for God's sake.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So you guys are covering that tonight on the hashtag Dork Podcast. You can check that out. Odyssey app. No, my sister-in-law mentioned this to me. She brought the kids, our son, while my wife and I
to
were
to go see.
On.
I know what you did last summer.
No, she brought them to see the live-action How to Train Your Dragon.
Did they like it?
And she's like, yes, they did. But she's like, I've noticed this trend with all these like remakes or live-action versions of them. She's like, they're all longer than the original. They don't need to be longer.
Weird.
Is that like a theme?
We want more scenes?
Yeah, I don't know. Is that like a theme?
So I don't know.
And the only reason I asked is you brought that up with I Know What You Did Last
Year. No, I feel like this year, though, a lot of movies have actually been on the shorter side.
I feel like the longest movie I've watched is like 227.
So what was that one?
It's like I think it was honestly Fountain of Youth was like the longest
movie.
Oh,
that movie stunk.
It was like 2.5 hours long, but every movie's been around 90 minutes to 2 hours.
Sinners was 2 hours, right?
That's like
or maybe plus, maybe 215. So I always go back to that one as sort of like, as long as the movie's good, I actually don't care how long the movie is.
We're getting pushback on I Know What You Did Last Summer is the greatest cast of all time.
What's a better cast than that?
Text line claims Grease, greatest cast ever.
All right, well.
Grease or I Know
Charlie
What You Did
Morton
Last
Summer. Texting in. Charlie Morton's like, when I was a kid, I watched Grease. They had a great cast. No, I Know What You Did Last Summer. Now, there might be better casts if you're going like 20 deep, like Can't Hardly Wait.
Sure.
Which has, obviously, Jennifer Love Hewitt also in that movie.
Yeah, she's an important factor in greatest cast of
more
all time.
More depth on that one. Yeah, but if you're just going for like the Four Horsemen.
Top heavy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's good. If you catch my drift. Yeah, no, I don't think you can really top that. This one, I don't watch the show Outer Banks, but I understand that it's very popular.
Uh-huh.
And one of the girls from Outer Banks is one of the girls in this.
Ah.
So maybe the younger demo will say this is a good cast. I didn't recognize any of the kid or teenage actors, which are also probably 25. So I didn't recognize any of them. But I did like the movie. Also,
are you talking about Madden Klein?
Yeah, she's in this. She
was in the second Knives Out movie, too.
Oh, okay. So there you go. So I'm sure, you know, people in their teens and 20s know who all those people are. And great. Then they really like them. Also, real quick, a streaming movie recommendation. The Amateur.
Mm-hmm.
Rami Malek, Lawrence Fishburne, John Bernthal. Pretty good.
Good cast.
Yeah, Nick just watched it as well over the weekend. What was was that on Hulu?
It was on Hulu, yep.
Yeah. Pretty good. Came out earlier this year, now streaming for free. Enjoyable. Rachel Brosnahan?
Uh-huh.
What a year for Brosnahan.
Big year.
Superman and now the Amateur?
Big year.
Look out above.
I mean, was this a former preview of yours? What refresh my memory. What is a real quick plot?
Charlie Heller is a brilliant CIA decoder whose world comes crashing down when his wife dies in a London terrorist attack.
Oh, spoiler.
When his supervisors refuse to take action, his intelligence becomes the ultimate weapon.
The Amateur.
As he embarks on a dangerous trek across the globe to track down those responsible.
I like it. Oh, I like that.
Vigilante justice.
Nice.
Thank you.
Best kind of justice.
Yeah, the only kind.
Okay. So there's a streaming recommendation on top of it. Make sure you check out the Dork Podcast, hashtag Dork Podcast, tonight with Keith and Davey on the Odyssey app. 617-779-7937. That's your phone number to get in touch. Jones and Keith. We'll get back to the Red Sox. Is it time to trust the Red Sox after they drop 2 out of 3 against Chicago, or you still have Matt arm's length? We'll get to that with your phone calls next.